Open your Bibles to 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy 6. Ricky had mentioned that there's several of our number gone today and we'll be potentially leaving throughout the week because of spring break, and we certainly want to pray for their safe trip, but it also brought people to us. There are people here today for that very same reason. They're also traveling for a mini getaway from home. And we're glad that you found your way to be with us, and hope that if something ever brings you back to Coleman again, you'll remember us and you'll come and worship with us again. If you're still in town, we'll be meeting Wednesday night. Bible classes for all ages starting at 7. Encourage you to come and be with us for that. In 1 Timothy 6 is a statement that we are content with, we understand, and we want to base our life off of. But very few people outside of religious people would believe this. 1 Timothy 6 verse 7, we brought nothing to this world, and it is certain that we can carry nothing out. None of us were going to argue with that. But not everybody believes this. I remember when I was in college, one of the popular bumper stickers at the time was this catchy little thing. It said, "He who dies with the most toys wins." I mean, think about that. The more stuff that we get, you know, that's the mark of success. That's how you win. Never considering that all that stuff's going to be left behind. A lot of people don't believe this. I want to give you one example today by way of introduction. It'll be a little longer introduction than maybe what we normally do, but I hope it'll hopefully just lead to the lesson and allow us to make applications later on. But I want to read a name if I can, and I'm not even going to pretend to think I can pronounce it right, but the first Chinese emperor, his name was Genshi Huangdai or something like that. And you can look it up. Even though I can't pronounce his name, and you might not be able to look him up off of that pronunciation, I'm going to tell you a story that will allow you to find him really, really quick if you're interested. He was the first Chinese emperor. You're talking 260 to 210 BC. We're talking 2,500 years ago. He's the one that conquered all those warring regions in China. And so he creates with that an empire, and he becomes the first emperor of that empire. And he began planning for his death long before he ever died. There were over 30 years of planning for his death. He believed that once he died, he would need a palace. He believed that he would need riches. He believed he would need an army, both to serve him and to protect him, to defend him. And so he had 70,000 craftsmen. Imagine that number. 70,000 craftsmen that worked over a period of roughly 35 years, between 30 and 40 years, to do what he needed done. And what he did was, he came up with an army. They made an army out of clay for him, to protect him from the grave and in the grave. This army that was made, it was thought to be a legend. The people in China had heard stories about this emperor's army, but nobody had ever seen it. They just thought it was a Robin Hood kind of thing. You know, just one of those tall tales that got handed down and through the generations. They would find, all along in the hillsides there, they would find little chunks of clay, which kind of fed to the myth, but nobody could ever find it. They couldn't be proven. And in 1974, think about that. You're talking 260 BC when it begins. 1974, there were two or three guys out building a well, or attempting to dig a well. And as they were digging, the earth just opened up. I mean, they just found this underground tavern. And they found his army. I can't pronounce his name, but if you're interested in this, you can read to your eyes. There's a lot about it. It's called the Terracotta Army. You can go home and you can look it up. The Terracotta Warriors. 70,000 workers for 30 plus years, crafted over 8,000 soldiers, generals, archers, infantry, cavalry, there were horses, there were chariots, there was a palace, all of it. Now, we have not, I say we, they have not even completely cleaned them all off. They're still in the process of doing the archaeology things. But here's a little bit closer up view of them standing in their order. You get in closer and you can see some of their faces. It wasn't just 8,000 cookie cutter things. They all had, if you look, and you see in the background, some of them have lost their head. They didn't make it through the archaeology part. But the armor was different on all 8,000. If you can see the facial expressions are different. This was an incredible undertaking. Incredible skill level that was shown. And that's his army to defend him. An army of clay, the terracotta warriors. To give you a little bit more detail about the king, like a lot of kings, very paranoid, very ruthless. He killed sons to prevent them from one day forming a coup. When he died, he had multiple wives. When he died, his wives that were alive had to be buried with him. They buried his wives alive. He wasn't going to leave them behind. Those 70,000 workers over the span of 30-something years, now many of them would have died. I mean, in the 30-something years, a lot of deaths would have come anyway. The ones still alive at his death were killed, executed, because they knew about the underground tomb. And he was afraid that they might do some, grave robbery. He killed the workers. When he died, his wives have to die with him. The workers have to die with him. And that explains of how it could stay such a secret for over 2,000 years. And then they find it. And so what's the point? A long introduction. I told you a lot longer than typical. What's the point? There's a lot of evil that can be said about this king, about this emperor. You know one thing you can't say? You can't say he didn't take his death serious. You can't say that he took it lightly. He didn't take it lightly at all. He planned over 30 years for the day he knew was coming. Another point for us to consider. Here's an evil man that doesn't know up from down about eternity. He doesn't have a clue about what Paul told Timothy. You're taking nothing with you. No, he took it all with him, he thought, including his wives, including his riches. And he's going to defend it with an 8,000 plus regimental army. He didn't have a clue about eternity. He didn't have a clue about the soul. But he spent 30-something years planning for his death so that when it happened, he was prepared as he thought prepared would be. And now the point for you and I is, he spent 30-something years planning for it. Do we spend 30 minutes a year thinking about it? Do we spend time contemplating and thinking and planning for what we know is going to happen? None of us here who think we're going to live forever. We're either going to die, or the Lord's going to come back and we're going to be translated into that spiritual body, whatever that is. But we're not staying like we are now. We know that. Here's a man who probably puts us to shame as far as the preparation. And he was doing it thinking the most toys won. And here we are with all this spiritual knowledge, spiritual awareness, and maybe not doing as much with it as we need to. Turn to John chapter 5. Do we consider and plan for this coming day? And there are some who are already turning and already thinking, oh, you really put a bummer on this. How morbid. How depressing. Oh, it doesn't have to be depressing. It shouldn't be depressing. John chapter 5, verse 29. Actually, back up into verse 28. Do not marvel at this. Jesus has been doing teaching. Do not marvel, verse 28. The hour is coming in which all that are in the graves will hear his voice. All the physically dead, and all would include the righteous and the unrighteous, all in the graves will hear his voice and shall come forth. They that have done good to the resurrection of life, those that have done evil to the resurrection of judgment, resurrection of damnation. No, it's not morbid for the Christian to consider death. Why would we not consider it? Getting away from all this trouble, getting away from the disappointment, getting away from the things that hurt, getting away from the things that can just chew us up. And we put that in the rear view for eternity. And then we get to go into the paradise realm where we talked about Stephen last week, and where the poor man who begged at Lazarus' table, basically. Paradise, Abraham's bosom. Why would we not think about and long for that day? We have an opportunity to prepare for certain death. This man spent 30-something years preparing. Prepared completely wrong, but at least give him credit for thinking about it. Because we might not be doing very well at that. We have the right and the opportunity to prepare and prepare well. And then we got this privilege of sharing our hope of resurrection. No, it doesn't have to be morbid. It doesn't have to be depressing. No, there is death and then there is life. Eternal life. And we get the chance while we're here to teach that. And to be and to spread that. And so can we take this lesson? And by the way, Hebrews chapter 9, it's pointed unto man wants to die. After this, the judgment. Can we take what we know and then adequately prepare? Are there some things about this Chinese emperor that we can indeed learn from? There's two points I want us to look at. The first thing is, don't take planning for this death lightly. Turn to Ecclesiastes 7. Let's do plan for this. Let's do be prepared for this. The wisest man on earth did this very thing. Solomon had wisdom from above. You and I are wise in a lot of things because we've studied, because we've experienced, because somebody taught us. There's a lot of ways you and I can be experienced and knowledgeable. Solomon is experienced and knowledgeable because God gave him wisdom he couldn't have any other way. He was talking about animals and sea life and plants and botany. He's talking about stuff he never studied. He had wisdom like none before. That was what blew the mind of the Queen of Sheba and all others who came into his contact. Here's the wisest man on earth with heaven-given wisdom. And he spent time talking about death, thinking about death. Ecclesiastes 7. It's better to go to the house of mourning, to the house of feasting. For that's the end of all. And the living will lay it to heart. Usually we only hear this at funerals. And in funerals we're so emotionally torn up inside, we might not even really hardly paying attention. So let's pay attention to that. There are things to be learned in the house of mourning that can't be learned in the house of feasting. Now, which do we prefer? That's not what Solomon ain't talking about, what we prefer. He's talking about what's most valuable. We prefer the house of party. We prefer the house of the potluck. We prefer the family get-togethers. They're fun and they're nice and they're not, and for those couple of hours it's a great time. And then what happens is we go home and life is still going. You go to the house of feasting tonight, but then tomorrow we wake up and we have another day of work. We have another day of disappointment. We have another day of stress. We have another day of... The party doesn't change life. Life keeps on going with all of its troubles. The house of mourning can change destiny. If that last phrase, if the living lay it to heart. If we will dwell on and think and meditate and be silent and still, like we talked about this morning, and realize I will die one day, or I will be translated to an eternal spirit, eternal body. I will stand before the Lord in judgment. My life is going to be judged on how I lived it according to the books, Revelation chapter 20. The books will be opened. We're going to be judged on how we lived according to those books. We know that. So let's prepare for that. Look at chapter 8 of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 8, verse 8. There is no man that has power over... The old King James says the spirit to retain the spirit. But the idea is the wind. And we've experienced that the last couple of weeks, haven't we? Two straight weeks where... How bad's the wind going to get? How fast is it going to spin? Where's it going to hit? And all anybody could do was watch the news, listen to the radio, and hopefully be in some form or fashion of a safe place. Because nobody could stop it. Nobody could change it. Who among men has the power over the wind to stop the wind? The answer is nobody. The wind does what it does, and we try to act accordingly. Well, there's something else just as true. That's his next thought. There is no man that has power over the wind to retain the wind. Neither is there power in the day of death. There's not a one of us here who can bull our way through death. We're not going to stiff arm it. We're not going to knock it. We're not going to conquer it. It's coming, is Solomon's point. Look back to chapter 2. Chapter 2. Solomon had a lot to say about it, didn't he? The one we're probably most familiar with is in chapter 3. There's a time to be born, there's a time to die, and we can sing that song. But he's got a lot more than just that. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 16. And what we find out is death is just, it's the greatest of equalizers. There is no remembrance of the wise more than the fool forever. Let's just pause right there. I'm going to ask a silly question, an unanswerable question, but it might not even be a proper question, but it'll make the point. Let's go back in Coleman 150 years ago. Where would we be? 1870s, 1880s? I wonder who the most faithful Christian in Coleman County was. And I wonder who the most ridiculous imbecile in Coleman County was. We don't know. There is no remembrance of the wise more than the fool forever. No. And if this world lives and spins another 150 years, there won't be a soul who knows who we are. We'll be a name on a tombstone at best. Nobody will know if we were faithful. Nobody will know if we were the fool. Nobody's going to know us. There's no remembrance of the wise more than the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how does the wise die? Just like the fool. The wisest in this room is going to die. The most foolish in this room is going to die. That's the point. How's the wise die? The same way the fool dies. There's a last breath. That's it. And we can change, if you want to change it from wise to fool, how does the king die? The same way the peasant does. How does the rich die? Same way the poor does. There's a last breath. So we would be wise to plan for this last breath. Turn to the 89th Psalm. We looked in the Psalms this morning. Pretty much the whole first lesson was looking at Psalms. Here's another one. Read with me verse 47. 89th Psalm 47. Remember how short my time is. The word time there, we would probably today use the phrase lifespan. That's what it's talking about. Remember how short my lifespan is. And then it said, like a question is asked. Why did you make man so mortal? Why did you make us like this? We're here this long. We're here the blink of an eye, a blip on a screen. And it's almost like the psalmist is saying, why did you make us so vain? Why did you make us so in the big picture, empty? Why did you make us so mortal? We're here for the blink of an eye. Verse 48, what man is he that lives and shall not see death? He's asking a rhetorical question. Shall he deliver his soul from the head of the from the hand of the grave? Selah. Let's think about it. Let's pause. And let's consider. And let's soul search. Remember our lifespan. Remember how mortal we are. Can anybody change this? Can anybody fight through death? Who's going to deliver us from the grave? And then he just stops. And the psalmist just thinks. And he goes silent. And he goes still. And he considers. The article in the bulletin. I thought it was a really good article. About that statement that President Jackson made. I'll just read that statement. When they were worried about him, I don't guess it would have been a pandemic, but there was a disease, and a lot of people are dying, and they're worried about you got to get out of there. There's a lot of disease, so you've got to come back to the country, come home, come to Tennessee, you'll be safe. And my dear Sarah, knowing that we have to die, we ought to live to be prepared to die well, and then let death come when it may. We'll meet it with no alarm. President Jackson is kind of like, we took an emperor that wasn't all that good of a man, we're trying to learn a principle from him. President Jackson wasn't a very good moral man either. And history proves that. But that might have been the most truthful words he ever spoke. He was right on that. So let's prepare and let's be ready and let's have no fear. And thinking of this, if we'll take the pause, if we'll take the stillness and the quietness and be silent and think about it, it'll sure help us prepare. And what it'll also do is it'll give us a greater appreciation for the gospel of Christ, which allows life after the grave. There is something to be learned from this emperor. If it helps us be better prepared for judgment, then let's take the lesson from the army and let's learn from it. There's another lesson from this terracotta army in this. Let's make sure we don't forget who is who in this matter. Like a lot of emperors, like a lot of kings, like a lot of world rulers, when everything's at your beck and call, when everybody is saying, sir, yes, sir, when everybody's jumping when you say jump, it sure can make us think higher of ourselves than we ought to. And the Chinese emperor forgot who the potter was. And he forgot who the clay is. And he thinks, I'm going to form this. And I'm going to have this done. And here's what's going to happen once I have it done. And he forgot who's in control. Look in Jeremiah chapter 18. Remember who we are. We are not the potter. We're not the one forming armies to serve us. We're a part of a spiritual army to serve another. Remember who is who. Kind of interesting about pottery, about the potter. In Jeremiah 18, I'm going to read a couple of verses, but just before we do that, it's interesting that the prophets and the apostles both used this imagery. In Romans 9, among other places, Paul talked about the potter. Isaiah, we're going to read Jeremiah, but Isaiah talked about the potter. It was common to them. They would have understood it. When Jeremiah starts talking about the potter working the wheel, they would think of what that meant. Isaiah, they knew what that meant. Days of Paul, they knew what that meant. Me and you probably do not. Now, this is a big room. A lot of people here, probably some people here who have seen a potter at work. There may even, in a number this big, some of you may have worked the potter yourself. Might not be good at it, but you probably worked a wheel. Most of us, we don't know a potter. And unlike them who knew, if you broke your dish, the potter's the third house on the right. Because you weren't going to get another dish without him. Me and you, my pottery came from Walmart. Or Dollar General. And if it breaks, we go buy some more. We don't know where it came from. We don't care about it. Unless it's that fancy China part. Then, they knew. And so you've got Old Testament prophets, you've got New Testament apostles, and they are using the potter to teach a lesson. So let's go into the house of the potter. Look in Jeremiah 18, verse 1. The word came to Jeremiah from the Lord, and it said, "Arise, go to the potter's house." He knew where he lived. They all would have known where he lived. "Go to the potter's house, and I will cause you to hear my words. I'm going to teach you something when you get there." I went to the potter's house, and behold, he worked a work on the wheels. So he's doing his thing. He's got the water, and he's got the clay, and he's got the wheel, and he's forming, and he's molding. Verse 4, the vessel that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again, another vessel that seemed good to the potter to make it. He's working his wheel. I don't even know enough about it to even talk about what could happen, but he's working his wheel, and it's not working right. It's not forming the way he has it in his mind. It's not looking like it ought to look, which means it's not going to work like it's supposed to work. And so he just crushes it, crumbles it, starts over, and makes it what it's supposed to be. Makes it look like it's supposed to look. Allows it to do the work it's designed to do. Lessons from the potter's house. So now here's the question. Who's the potter? He said, "You go to the potter's house, I'm going to teach you a lesson." Well, what's the lesson? Look in verse 6. Here's the lesson. "The word of the Lord came to me saying, 'O house of Israel, can I not do with you like this potter, says the Lord? Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so are you are in my hand.'" Go to the potter house, Jeremiah. I'm going to teach you something. Watch him work. You see how it's made a mess of it? Do you see how it's not what it's supposed to be? But then he corrects it, and he remolds it, and he refigures it, and it becomes workable. It becomes what it should. And then he says, "Do you understand I'm the potter here? And do you understand that my people are the clay? They are not what they're supposed to be. They do not do the works I designed for them to do. They are marred, and I'm going to start over. They're going to go to prison for a while. They're going to go to Babylon for a while. They're going to get beat on for a while. They're going to be oppressed for a while. I'm going to take a king, and I'm going to put a hook in his mouth, and we're going to drag him off as if he were a fish being pulled out of the water." Look in 2 Timothy 2. What's the point of this? Well, the point is we're the clay. And we need to participate. We need to cooperate. We've got to respond to his hands. Because there is a purpose for what he's trying to do. There's Carl and I have some dishes, and I'm sure you do too. We have dishes that never get used. Some of them, they're kind of sentimental. They're from somebody's, you know, great, great, whatever. Some of it because of the fancy china that gets used once a year. Some of it just because it just serves an ornamental purpose. It matches the color for this. And God is the potter, and we are the clay, and we are not for ornamental purposes. He's working the wheel on us to make us what we are designed to be, supposed to be, not so that we can be set on a shelf and looked at and observed. No, there is work to do. There's cups you drink out of and cups you look at. There's plates you eat off of and plates you look at. We're the ones that's to be used. There's a purpose for this. Look at 2 Timothy 2, verse 20. "In great houses," so even in palaces, this stands true, "in great houses, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor." He said, I don't care what house you go into. There's fancy things and there's common things. There's expensive things and there's cheap things. There's things that can be set aside as ornaments, and there are things that if they break, it's no sweat off anybody's back. Verse 21. "If a man therefore purge himself from these..." What's he talking about? Context. If we were to back up 4 or 5 verses, he's talking about false teachers. The danger false teachers can do, the dangers false teachings can do, that it can shipwreck souls and that it becomes cancers. And if we purge ourselves from these things, if we just go to the text, "Let the doctrines of man stand on their own." But if we purge ourselves of all those man-made things, if we purge ourselves from these things, we will be a vessel unto honor, sanctified, meet for the Master's use, and prepared for every good work. A cup that doesn't hold its liquid is not fit for the work. We've had some dishes called about one time, and we didn't keep them long because for whatever reason, they looked pretty. But when you started putting food on it, everything ran to the middle. You just the way it was, everything just kind of all crammed to the middle. We didn't keep them very long. They didn't serve the purpose we wanted. And the point he's making is, he said, in every house there's vessels of honor and vessels of dishonor. There's gold and there's wood and there's silver and there's stubble. And if we purge ourselves of worldly things, we are one of those vessels of honor. We can be one of those vessels that do exactly what it was supposed to do. A cup that holds water and a plate that holds the food and a serving tray that does what it was designed to do. That's the mark of a good potter, is that you make things that's usable and they serve their purpose. Do we understand what the emperor did not understand? He thinks he's the potter. He thinks he's the army creator. No, we are the clay. We're the ones being formed, but there is a purpose behind the formation. We are to serve. Honorable service. Turn to Romans 14. We need Him, so let's appreciate Him. A lump of clay never becomes anything but a lump of clay until the master potter goes to work. And then what looks just like a big old ball of just brown nastiness becomes beautiful and usable, serviceable. So we need Him, because we'll never be anything in service without Him. A second reason that we need Him, we go back to Jeremiah 18. We were that misformed thing, right? Are we humble enough to admit that? We became better than anything we could have ever been on our own. He saw this ruined thing and reformed it. Me and Carla are still going through boxes from when we moved, and we've thrown away a lot of things. You know, this evidently this week is where they're going to come pick up a lot of stuff that you don't want. Put it on the side of the road, it's gone. We put a lot of stuff on the side of the road. Things we don't want anymore. Aren't we glad God didn't put us on the side of the road? Because we were marred and we were damaged. And we were a pot that didn't do what it was supposed to do. We were a cup that couldn't hold water. We were a plate you couldn't serve off of. We didn't match up. And instead of discarding, He just lets His word, He lets His message, He just works us. He works the wheel. And if we cooperate, we become exactly what we're supposed to be. Look at Romans chapter 14. Chinese emperor got it wrong. Whether we live, we live to the Lord. Whether we die to the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. We don't have to craft things to serve us in death. Instead, let's allow God to mold us in life so that we can serve Him. Do we understand? I'll just run this thing back a second. We're not the ones been formed to stand before some earthly king. No, we're not going to form an army to stand before ourselves. We are the spiritual army. We are the works of clay. The question is, the invitation is, how are we? Are we a vessel of honor or dishonor? Gold or wood? Are we engaged in the spiritual fight? Are we serving Him in life so that we can serve Him and honor Him and praise Him in death? It's time to pause, isn't it? It's time to be still. It's time to be silent. It's time to, what were some of those other phrases we looked at this morning? It's time to soul search and contemplate, and am I in my spot? Turn to John chapter 9. At death, We won't need an army standing before us. Instead, we're going to be the ones standing before a king. In John chapter 9, I want to take a context a little bit out. You'll remember the chapter. One of my favorite chapters in the Gospels is John chapter 9, all the applications that could be made about the healing of that blind man. We're picking way into the story. He's gone back to the neighborhood. Interviews have taken place with neighbors and with family, and the answers keep coming back. Yes, he was. This is him. This is not a sham. That man right there was born blind. And so then they start. Okay, well, how did it happen? And they ask and they ask and they ask. They kept asking the blind man. Then they go to the neighbors. Then they ask the blind man. They go back to the parents. And they ask the blind. They ask him over and over, and he's had his fill, rightfully so. In verse 27, he answered and said, I have already told you. How many times are you going to ask? I have already told you and you will not listen. Therefore, you're going to hear it again? You're going to ask me again? Look at the next phrase. Will you also be his disciples? So you've asked me and you've asked me and you asked me. You're not paying attention. Okay, you've asked me again. This time if I tell you, will you hear? Will you also be his disciple? That's a confession right there. Here's the blind man saying, yeah, I'm his disciple. I'm going to follow him. If I answer this question again, will you follow him finally? Will you finally listen? Will you finally obey? Will you finally follow? Will you finally disciple? That's a good invitation, isn't it? Death is coming. Judgment is coming. I would be shocked if there's anybody here of an accountable age who that is new information to. We've got people here who can't understand that yet because of age. But everyone who's old enough to understand that, that's not groundbreaking news. Every one of us in this room came into the building with that confidence. So, will you also be his disciple? It's not about what we know. It's about what we do. It's not about the information. It's what we're going to finally do with the information. The emperor of China was right in the information. I'm going to die, and I need to prepare for that. And how he did it was as opposite as what he should have done as could be. It might be me and you, not just a whole lot better. Get your songbooks out. Death is coming. Selah. Consider it. Judgment's coming. Selah. We need to consider that. There is a way in which we can stand blameless, spotless, sinless. We need to consider that. If you believe Jesus is God's Son, you have to believe that by faith. There's no other way you could come to that conclusion. Just, will you be his disciple? Let your faith act. Confess, repent, be baptized, wash your sins away. Take advantage. Put your trust in those promises. And then let him mold you. We don't have all the answers. We're just in progress. We're being molded. Let him start the process. Let's become a vessel of honor. If we can help you in any way, do it while we stand and sing.